Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week we're looking ahead to June's European Union in-out referendum vote here in the UK, gauging the potential outcomes and asking what a so-called Brexit from the European Union could mean in economic terms, whether it be the impact on asset classes for investors or the bigger picture for the UK and Eurozone economies. We'll leave no stone unturned as we hear from our UBS experts and global analysts. We start with John Wraith, head of UK rate strategy at UBS. We asked John to sum up, where are we at now in terms of polling and the public view? What are he and his colleagues planning around?
Well, there's obviously still a long way to go until we actually have the referendum, which is an important point because a lot can change between now and then. We do see in most of the opinion polls that there are a lot of undecided voters who clearly could be swayed one way or the other by events between now and then. So nothing certain, but we think it's more likely than not that the UK ultimately votes to stay in the EU. Our sort of published probability on that is about 60% against 40%. So, you know, a reasonably comfortable outlook with regard to staying in. But, you know, circumstances are fast changing and the markets are obviously nervous, and rightly so, given the amount of time we have to go. And as I said, the fact that some polls are fairly close and a lot of people haven't made their minds up yet.
Dean Turner, strategist in the UBS CIO, shares his insights into the latest opinion polls and what they might tell us.
At the moment, the pollings are extremely close, as I'm sure most are aware. Now, we have seen that the Leave campaign have gained some support in recent months, and there has even been a couple of specific polls that have put the Leave campaign in lead. But on the whole, what we're seeing when we take a broader average of all the polls is that there's still a lead for the Remain camp. But what's probably more interesting in the polling at the moment is the very large amount of undecided voters, and that's around one-fifth of those polls. Now, in our view, it's going to be whoever wins the support of these undecided voters that actually ends up winning the referendum. Now, our sense is that, as things currently stand, the undecided voters are the ones that are really in the middle, and the kind of more moderates, and history tells us that those voters who are in the middle tend, on average, to favour the status quo.
Next, we consider what's at stake in terms of the broad economic impact. The implications of a Brexit are really twofold, explains Paul Donovan, global economist at UBS. First, the importance of regulation.
The economic implications of a UK exit from the EU really come in two ways. For the UK, it is about the way in which economic trade with the EU is conducted. And the issue here is not about tariffs. Everyone thinks it's always about tariffs and protectionism. Well, we're all part of the World Trade Organization, so actually that's not the issue. The issue is about regulation. And regulation is very important. Regulation of trade is about 70% tariff equivalent in some cases. You know, a regulatory obstacle can be a real barrier to doing trade. Now, at the moment, the EU has common regulation, and that means that the UK has influence over the regulation of its trade with the EU. The issue, economically speaking, is that outside the EU, the UK would still have free trade, but it would be on Europe's terms, and the UK would have no influence over the regulation. The second issue, economically, though, and this is, I think, the thing which is underappreciated in financial markets today, is that the UK leaving the EU has an impact on the Eurozone. If the UK leaves the EU, then the balance of power in Europe shifts. And in an economic sense, I think Germany and free market liberalism that Germany espouses would decline. And the more corporatist approach of France would be in the ascendant, because the UK tends to side with Germany on a lot of economic issues. In other words, Europe without the UK looks a lot more southern European in its economic policies.
When it comes to the broad economic impact of the vote, is the wider narrative reflecting the real issues? Here's John Wraith again.
There is a risk that all of the uncertainty, the focus on what is such a major risk event, saps some of the momentum out of the economic recovery between now and the referendum. So we have a sort of slightly soft first half of the year in terms of economic activity. And we are seeing some early signs of that in the data. We've seen a couple of slightly weaker economic indicators recently, which do suggest that some confidence is ebbing away a bit. We don't think that's going to become too serious, just a sort of, you know, relative loss of momentum, as I say. And then once you get beyond it, you know, in our view, if the UK votes to stay in, essentially that is keeping obviously the status quo, and we would think that any sort of lost activity may return in the second half, so you'd sort of make up for lost time a bit. And on our central view, we get growth of around 2% this year, which would be okay. We do think on an exit that there are downside risks to the economy, at least in the short term, because we would herald in a period of high uncertainty while new relationship with the EU is negotiated, and you know the whole EU-UK membership is unraveled, and that could either be a fairly sort of gentle slowdown if that's all done in a fairly benign way, or something more serious if it's more fractious, and you know that will only become clear after the referendum. So, you know, downside risks on an exit, at least for the next couple of years, and potentially a sort of slight bounce back in recovery if we vote to stay in.
And how would Dean Turner sum up what's at stake in terms of the wider economic impact?
What's at stake here is the fact that the United Kingdom's largest trading partner, where 44% of goods and services exports from the UK go to the European Union. It's by far and away the largest trading partner for the United Kingdom. Now, in a Brexit world, we're not suggesting for one moment that that trade would stop. I mean, clearly the European Union wishes to trade with the UK as much as the UK wishes to trade with the European Union. We mustn't forget that the UK actually runs a trade deficit with the European Union, so European countries would be keen to maintain relationships. But our sense is that given the uncertainty that a Brexit would throw up in the short term in terms of what does the trade relationship with our largest trading partner look like in a Brexit world, could actually weigh on confidence in the UK, business confidence, so that would mean investment could slow, hiring could slow, and in turn that could also weigh on consumer confidence. So there could be a confidence shock on the economy that could mean the economy slows whilst this period of uncertainty is worked through. So even once the economy gets over the short-term shock, our sense is that the potential growth rate for the UK economy could actually be marginally lower than would be the case if we stayed within the European Union.
Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll hear the arguments for the UK remaining within the EU or leaving. Plus, we consider what could happen to sterling in a post-Brexit world and mull the implications too for equities and bond markets. Martin Sandbu is economics writer for the Financial Times and a keen student of the future of the euro with his most recent acclaimed book, Europe's Orphan. We asked him to summarise the pro and anti positions for us and to reflect on how coherently or not these arguments are being advanced. First up, what are the primary economic reasons for the UK to stay in the EU?
I think there are two kinds of arguments. One is a sort of the status quo is good and improving argument, and the other is that leaving would be dangerous, economically speaking. So the first type says that, look, in the EU, we have the single market, we have deep trading relations, and the new deal that Cameron agreed with his counterparts promises to maybe improve that somewhat further by cutting red tape, a commitment to less or better regulation, and of course, a push for more trade in services, which are important for the UK economy. And then as well, there is, call it Project Fear, there is the scare stories about how badly things could go if the UK leaves. And the idea here is, look, you will break these trading relationships. You have no idea what will come in return for the single market access, but it will most likely be worse. Now, how well are they made? They're coherently made. People try to put numbers on these, but generally it's very hard to put numbers on these sorts of estimates. It's economic models don't capture it very well. A lot of it is, to be frank, guesswork. The models we have give small effects, but I think the general economist view here would be that most of the time, breaking things up and integrating less is worse for economic growth and prosperity than integrating and doing more things in common with larger markets.
And what about the key economic drivers for leaving the bloc?
On the one hand, the Brexiteers make a claim that things are really bad in the EU, that the regulations are hampering growth, and that the poor economic performance of especially the Eurozone is a sign of how sclerotic the EU is, that it's a brake on growth rather than a way to achieve it. And similarly then, there is an argument saying, if only we were outside, we could have much less regulation, we could free small businesses from all these burdens, and we could have all kinds of wonderful trade agreements with the rest of the world. I'm much more skeptical of these claims. Partly, there's very little evidence that the EU is actually holding the UK back, because the UK already has one of the most flexible labour markets in the rich world. It is clearly growing faster than much of the rest of Europe. So things are already going pretty well. And once you get to specifics, it's kind of hard to point to things that should be removed and that would make things a lot better. Similarly, it's very hard to say what the alternative would be, because there are so many possibilities. None looks particularly convincing. The models that exist out there, Norway, Switzerland, and so on, are bad models. You kind of get the same regulations with even less say. There is an ambition among some of the Brexiteers to negotiate much better relationships, many more trade deals, and so on. Frankly, the level of ambition seems a bit unrealistic. There are so many people you would have to negotiate with separately that it could take a long time. It's very hard to put numbers on this. In the long run, we don't really know. The Bank of England governor, Mark Carney, said as much in the long run. It's hard to tell. But again, usually in economics, integrating works better than breaking things apart.
That was Martin Sandbu. Next up, what will the impact be on sterling of the various outcomes in the summer? What happens to the pound in the event of Brexit? Here's John Wraith.
Well, we're on record as saying that the weakness of sterling that we've seen over the past 3 months or so is predominantly all about the referendum and concerns around it. Sterling's something like 8% lower on a trade-weighted basis than it was in November, which is a material weakening. And that's happened while, at least until recently, economic data has held up just fine. So we do attribute that to Brexit worries. It could get worse into the referendum. As I said, nervousness might grow between now and then. And then coming out the other side, a little bit like the economic outlook, we either expect the currency to rebound if the UK stays in, or potentially to lose further ground if the UK exits. One of the reasons for that is the UK runs a large current account deficit, which means effectively it needs financing by external investors. And if they are put off by uncertainty around what sort of relationship the UK will have with the EU in future, they will need, you know, a more attractive currency level to continue investing in the way that, you know, we need them to do. So we do think there's downside risk to sterling, both in a modest way up to the referendum and potentially more seriously afterwards if the vote is to leave.
Dean Turner shares his insights into the likely asset class impact, with sterling again front and centre.
The main focus for investors would actually be sterling. The reason for that is the cleanest way to express any concerns around a Brexit scenario. The UK has a very large current account deficit, which has to be funded. If we were to enter a period of uncertainty following a Brexit, then there's a very good chance that those funding requirements could become more difficult. And the only way that we could amend that current account deficit would be for sterling to trade at a lower level over the medium term. Post the referendum, and must emphasise that our base case is that the UK decides to remain in the EU, we would actually expect that sterling would rebound. Our 12-month forecast for sterling is 156. However, if we were wrong on that call and the UK did decide to leave the European Union, we actually see further downside for sterling whilst this period of uncertainty weighs on not just the economy but also the market. So we could actually see sterling trade significantly lower, perhaps down to the 120s and settle around the 130s.
But what about the equity market? It's certainly harder to predict, explains Dean.
The reason for that is that if we think of the FTSE 100, 76% of FTSE 100 earnings come from outside the UK. So if we're correct in our view that sterling weakens significantly in a Brexit scenario, that weakening sterling could actually be a slight boon for the FTSE 100 and all those overseas revenues. There would be a translational impact. That said, one of the things we do think that would happen in the equity market is that some of the domestically focused companies would likely suffer, as there would most likely be a more challenging outlook for growth in the UK economy. And our sense is that in that scenario, we might see the FTSE 250, which has 50% of revenues generated in the UK, might suffer relative to an index like the FTSE 100.
And finally, the bond market. Here's Dean Turner again.
Clearly, other things being equal, slower growth in the UK could raise questions over the UK's fiscal position, and there could also be questions around the credit rating of the UK in a Brexit scenario. So that on its own should point to gilt yields moving higher in the event of a Brexit decision. However, one of the things we would say that if the economy were to slow in a Brexit scenario, then we would expect to see a policy response from the Bank of England. Now, that would most likely come in the form of an interest rate cut. So that, in our view, could actually be a more powerful impact on the bond market. So we could see gilt yields, especially at the shorter end of the curve, actually move lower on the back of this policy response.
Finally, on today's programme, is this an economic decision that confronts the British electorate? Should it be governed purely by the economics, or is it necessarily a decision informed by politics, by social dynamics, migration and more? Here's Paul Donovan.
This is an economic and a political and a social decision. It's a variety of issues coming together. Now, clearly, as an economist, I tend to prioritise economics. I think that this is very important to how societies work. And economics is basically about how people interact with one another. So I think that that is an important element. But clearly it is not the only element. And if we look at those campaigning to exit, the three no campaigns, the three campaigns for exit, have basically split over two issues. One group is primarily focused on issues of sovereignty, you know, the United Kingdom should be able to make decisions independent of European coordination. And then the other issue, of course, is the vexed subject of immigration and the extent to which economic migration into the UK has grown over the last few years. Both sovereignty and immigration have economic consequences, but they are also political and social issues, and probably first political and social issues, even though there are economic consequences from how we shape ourselves as a society.
And that's Paul Donovan, bringing us to the end of this 75th edition of The Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance every week here on Monocle 24. Don't miss next week's edition, where we'll be getting the latest from the US presidential election campaign trail. Listen again and find out more in the meantime at monocle.com or via the usual channels. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.